Blog Talk Radio.
Fish boy from the TV?
Fish man.
My son, you could unite our worlds one day. The land and the sea.
I'm not a king.
The world needs something more. A hero.
Aquaman. Rated PG-13. See the extended video on YouTube now.
Sorry, that makes me that yeah at the end of that always makes me laugh. That's just like pure Jason Momoa. I don't even know if they put that in the script or not. He probably just put that in there. There's another part of the in the movie where he's like, "This is badass," and I imagine that he probably just put that in there too, because I imagine that he is just Aquaman and Aquaman is him. Welcome everybody to Cinema Royale. I'm Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics. Now, obviously, that clip was from Aquaman, which opened this weekend. And I haven't checked the box office yet, but I'm pretty sure it's doing great. I had an awesome start on a Thursday night. I think I made $9 million on Thursday night. Made $4 million at the week earlier when they did the Amazon Prime previews. I saw it then as well. Made $4 million then, so it's off to a hot start. So I think it's probably going to do pretty well this weekend. I'll do the box office numbers for the site as soon as I get off the air here. I'll probably check them out sometime in the middle of the show too, just so I can, just for context. But anyway, we got to talk about that because that's the biggest movie of the busiest weekend of the entire year, man. This is, you know, if I were a studio, I would have gotten my movie so far away from this weekend. I mean, you just wouldn't even know. I mean, you got Aquaman. Bumblebee comes out this weekend. Mary Poppins Returns came out on Wednesday. That's out now. You got Vice. You've got Welcome to Marwen. You've got so many movies. We're going to try to fit them all in, but we really don't have a lot of time to waste because my buddy Chris Bumbay from JoeBull.com is here with us, and he's got to leave us pretty early. He said, you know, I got more important things to do. You know, I write for Joe Blow. You know, I don't have time for you anymore. So I can only give you 30 minutes of my time, you know, but so we're going to try to take advantage of it by having him on here.
I said 30-ish minutes.
Yeah. 30, 40 minutes. I know. I'm just messing around. But as you could tell, he is already on. So we're just going to jump right into this and start talking about.
I'm looking at the box office numbers when you mentioned it. I looked it up on I have this amazing thing called a smartphone. It's great. You can like go on the internet on your phone. It's crazy.
Yeah, I know. I was looking at Box Office Mojo. Box Office Mojo hasn't updated theirs for the weekend yet. Yeah, I saw it had 28 million
Deadline,
on Friday. Pretty good. So.
Yeah, Deadline had it in, and it says that it is at 68 million for the weekend, but then it's 72 million with the Amazon previews included.
Nice.
So.
Nice.
Pretty good. For a DC movie. And considering it's the holidays too, that's the thing though, because those movies, you know, it's funny what you say about the busy weekend. The reason that they end up putting everything in on that weekend is because things play so well over the holidays. You know, they've got like, because everybody apparently like something like the 26th, 27th, 28th are like the busiest movie going days of the year. Everybody always goes. That's how like Jumanji made like $400 million last year, and it didn't even have that huge of an opening. But you're right though. It's really packed. I mean, there's not only Aquaman and Bumblebee and Mary Poppins, but then on Christmas Day there's Sherlock Holmes, like the Will Ferrell.
They're opening cold. They're opening that cold.
Yeah. Yeah, which I didn't get it. It told me no press screenings for me either, which is weird because usually those two are pretty good. But I think it's the guy who did Get Hard. Get Hard was really
bad. It's Ethan Toe and the guy who did Tropic Thunder also, and I mean, I don't know. It's just, I guess they figure those two don't need any press screenings. You know, it's not really necessary. But then again,
do you ever hear the story about Ethan Cohen, the way that the reason that Bill Murray did Garfield was because he saw it said Ethan Cohen and he thought that it was Ethan Cohen.
Yeah, I remember that.
Like, Ethan Cohen. And then he's like, who wrote this shit? And then they like, and then he thought, and then it was, it turned out it was this other guy. Not only that, but also, Vice goes wide on the 25th, and then a bunch of movies are going in limited too, like Destroyer, which is probably one of my favorite movies of the year. And
we don't even have a date for Destroyer yet, like in DC. We don't have a date for that yet. We can't even post our... It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. It's only opening on 3 screens, so it's really just a qualifying run. Like, they're just trying to get it so that it could be considered. But it's in Montreal, we're not getting it until, like, January 25th, which
I think
is crazy.
That's what we're getting it now. Yeah, you're right.
I think that's when it goes out most
also got, I mean, you've got If Bill Street Could Talk opens next week as well. I mean, you just got so many movies. And movies are expanding this week. It's like Mary Queen of Scots is expanding this week. I mean, so it's like, you know, it's weird. It's just so much all at once. And I think it's a little overwhelming. But some movies are gonna suffer because of it. But Aquaman obviously isn't one of them. I went into this. I saw it last week at the Amazon Prime preview. This place was totally packed. And people seem to be loving it the whole way through. This is, of course, the Jason Momoa version of the character. We saw him introduced in Batman vs. Superman in that weird sort of video cameo of him under the water. We saw him in Justice League. This version of the character, I think, is much better than the one we saw in Justice League. For obvious reasons.
Oh, in Go Justice ahead. League, I really didn't think that he was going to be able to carry a movie after watching those scenes. Like, I thought that there was no way that this was going to work, especially with how they were talking underwater and like the air bubbles and stuff like that. I just didn't think that would be able to, he'd be able to do a movie like that. But, Juan is good though. He kind of knows how to make an action movie, right? I mean, he's turned into like a really solid director on that scale.
They're
and,
very
you know, like
well
you said.
Rounded.
Yeah.
Very
and you know,
well
the
rounded.
Thing is I saw it in kind of a strange way because I didn't get to go to the promo screening because I had to go see Bumblebee that night. Cause we had already run Aquaman reviews because Paul, the editor on the site, has been really
never heard of
like in he's been really into the production. He knows him. He's been really into the production of the movie though. Like he visited the set and he did the junkets and he was in the edit bay. So they really, I don't know why they kind of, but so he saw it really early at like a screening and stuff like that. And he loved it, but you know, I didn't do any of those things. So I was gonna give my honest reaction. That's why they wanted me specifically to review it, right? Because I was the only one that hadn't seen it at like some fancy junket, so they were like, well, you should probably do it. I ended up going with my girlfriend on Thursday night to this we had this theater in Montreal, this really cheap theater called the CineStars, where it's like $5 all the time to see a movie because it's an old multiplex from like the 80s, right? but I it's not far from my apartment, so I like going there because the thing is it's like It's in this crazy weird mall that hasn't changed since like the 1990s. So like you find like the weirdest there's a toy store there that is still selling Superman memorabilia with Brandon Routh. Brandon Routh Superman or like the Amazing Spider-Man, like the first one with like Andrew Garfield. Like it's really weird. It hasn't changed at all. There's internet cafes and stuff like that. Like it's so strange. And this theater is ancient, right? And there's mice in the theater too. But my girlfriend loves going to it. She thinks it's charming, you know, but I like going to it too because they don't have 3D or anything like that. So you get to see it in 2D and I like 2D and I wanted to see this in 2D. And I have to say it was for me, the thing that I really liked about Aquaman that I really appreciated is that it annoys me when movies shoot too dark. Like I really had a bone to pick with Solo. Like as much as I think he's a talented guy, Bradford Young, his movies are so friggin' dark. You know, I find if you don't watch them if it's not shown.
I mean,
like,
I guess that works if you're making Ink Them Body Saints or something, I guess that works, but it doesn't work for every movie.
Yeah. Because the thing is, Ain't Them Body Saints is going to show in an art house where they like perfectly calibrate their projectors, right? Like, and it's really set the you know, the like the it's a real art house where they where there's passion going into it. But you know, the thing about Solo, it's playing on 3,000 screens and it's going to play on a lot of shitty screens. And when I saw Solo, like, I'm sure the 3D cap was still on or something, and it was so dark when I saw it that I never got a good look at Chewbacca the whole time. I never got a good look at him, you know. And so I really liked Aquaman because it was the first like really colorful, you know, action movie that I've seen in a while where everything was bright and a lot of it took place in the day. And you know, I really
it was the, and it was the brightest and it was the brightest looking DCEU movie that we've had too.
Yeah,
I mean, Man of Steel was okay, but it was sort of grayed out. I thought it felt like, or it
yeah,
felt like it
and
was
Wonder Woman was too. Wonder Woman had kind of like a gray because it was, you know, it was like a lot of it took place in no man's land in World War One, so it was appropriate for the movie. Mm-hmm. But I really liked it though. I mean, it was a lot more in line with Wonder Woman than the Snyder movies, you know, and oh, I'm gonna get killed by the fanboys for saying that, but it was just you know, I thought it was colorful. It moved really well. I thought it was very entertaining. And you know, it's funny, my girlfriend really liked it too, and she's not always into those types of movies, but we both had a really good time watching it. You know, it was just fun. It was silly. I mean, it was very silly, like, you know, when you have the titles of like the different parts of like the sea, you know, that were coming up on the screen.
Yeah.
We were kind of chuckling, you know, and there was one part of my girlfriend turned to me and she goes, "Is that Dolph Lundgren?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And she goes, "Well, he's really loving the hair, right?"
Yeah, it's been a good month for Dolph. Good month for, he's actually a lot of fun in this movie too.
I really liked him
because he's Dolph Lundgren. Like, that role wouldn't have been fun if it was somebody else. But because it's
Dolph
Lundgren,
you know, which brings me to my one problem with Aquaman, though, because I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. But my one problem with Aquaman, and it's too bad because he's an actor that I like, is Patrick Wilson. I thought Patrick Wilson was totally miscast in the part because you needed somebody that was larger than life, because everybody else is larger than life in the film, including Momoa especially, but also, you know, Nicole Kidman and, you know, these are all people, even Tamara Morrison, these are all people playing like these big, larger than life characters. Dolph Lundgren, perfect example of that, you know? And you needed that for Patrick Wilson's character because he seems too normal. I don't buy him as a credible threat against Jason Momoa because he's like, you know, you needed a guy like that. Like, I thought the guy who played Black Manta was a lot better as a villain.
I
thought he was great, and he was kind. He was even the guy who played his dad too from Beale Street. You know, I found that they were Michael Beach. I think.
Those actors that you see them and you just instantly chuckle. Like Michael Beach is the guy for me. So anytime I see him in a movie, I just kind of laugh. Like,
I think
instantly think of Bad Company. With like him and Lawrence Fishburne and Ellen Barkin. Like,
Franklin,
I instantly think of him in that, and then I think of him in like Howard Beach and all these other movies that I saw him in where I'm like, Michael Beach. He just makes me laugh. Like,
so. I thought he was good though as Black Manta's dad, and I really liked that character. But the thing is, that guy was playing, I can never remember his name, Yahya
Abdul-Mateen, yeah.
I thought he was great. He was kind of larger than life as well though, and he really, really worked opposite Momoa. And that was my problem with Patrick Wilson in the movie. They needed, you know, Michael B. Jordan in Black Panther was larger than life. So he really fit that part, you know? And I get that.
I have an issue with Patrick Wilson that I can never take him seriously. Like, I just never can. Like, it doesn't matter what he's doing. I don't take him seriously. Like, even when I watch him in Watchmen, I'm like, Patrick Wilson. Like, I can't ever do it, you know? And
Laura said she feels like he's like the middle-aged kind of hot dad next door.
I mean, that's his little children character, isn't it? I mean,
totally. and you know what? He was amazing in Little Children. I thought he was fantastic.
He's great
in
Little Children.
Movie.
That was a perfect role for him. And he's great in the Conjuring movies too. I mean, he's really good.
I agree.
It's not as if he's even a bad actor. It's just that some roles are better for him than others. And I would agree with you that I don't think he's that great in this either. At least the role's not right for him. I would have liked to have seen a more physical presence. But then again, I also understand that that, you know, we're also talking, you know, superhumans, and you don't need to look muscular to be strong. Like, that was kind of his thing. Like, that was kind of his thing.
But he needed the personality.
Like, yeah, he doesn't have the personality for it either.
Yeah.
But he's also kind
of... I was trying to think who would have been good for that. I'm kind of trying to think, like, you know, youngish or guys, like, in their 30s and 40s who would have been good for that part. You know, I don't know. Like, it's kind of, you know...
Kellen Lutz. You want Kellen Lutz in the role?
Well, I don't know. Somebody like that. You know, I mean, maybe. You know, they, you kind of... I don't know. I don't find he's that great of an actor. But, you know, it's just kind of, you know... Maybe, you know, would have been good. You know, I would have cast Armie Hammer because he's huge.
That would have been
huge. He would have been perfect.
That would have been very interesting, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, The Opposite of Sex comes out next week, or On the Basis of Sex comes out next week.
I haven't seen that one yet. I've got the screener. I've got the screener sitting on my coffee table. I'm planning on watching it.
It's decent, but that's another.
I don't know how that's going to be able to match up with RBG though, because I thought RBG was so well done. You know, it's weird now seeing like the fictionalized version with Hollywood actors.
It matches up like most fictional, or at least narrative attempts, you know, tell a documentary story work. Not quite.
Well,
as well.
We're going to get into one of those a little bit later, I think. How long could it possibly go?
I know, but the thing I really liked about Aquaman, though, is that it never takes itself too seriously the whole way through, one of those things that the DC movies have really fallen into that trap in the Snyder years, was that they all were just so, not just grim, but just too goddamn serious. Even if I liked them, I like Justice League fine. Like, I didn't hate it like a lot of people do.
Oh,
that was fine.
Oof.
But yeah, I know. But I didn't hate it. But the one thing I can't say is that I want to watch it again, because it's not really fun.
Oh no,
it's not really a fun movie. You know, like, even if I think it's okay, I don't really want to watch it, and I haven't watched it since. So there aren't very many DC movies that I have watched again, other than Suicide Squad, which is good for 3/4 of it, and then Wonder Woman, which is pretty good. But the rest of them, I have not had any desire to really watch them again. I haven't watched Batman vs. Superman more than once.
It's funny. I usually don't watch these kinds of movies necessarily more than once either. But, you know, I've got, you know, the Canadian HBO, right? Like Crave Now or something like that. And I sometimes if I'm flicking through the channels, I'll see stuff come on, right? And Justice League popped up a little while ago. And I mean, you watch that movie now, especially, you know, having seen it before and you know the things that went wrong. I mean, it's almost unwatchable, I find, especially if you're watching it a second time, because you can really pick out like the flaws, like especially, you know, the CGI they used to remove Cavill's mustache. Like, that was really clumsily done, considering the movie cost that much money. And, you know, the thing is, I think I told you this story before. I visited the set of Justice League, right, way back like 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago. And it's funny, Momoa and Cavill were the only two of that bunch that I didn't meet, because neither of them were filming at the time. But like, the stuff that I saw on the set, like the concept art they were showing me, is stuff that never ended up in Justice League. Like, they made another version of that movie will never be seen because it was never finished.
Yeah, but that's the way Zack Snyder movies are. So the way for Zack Snyder movies is that he has these amazing ideas. All these great ideas that for a fanboy are like, you know, ice cream and lollipops. I mean, they're just like, they're like everything you could ever ask for. They connect to the comics. They have this great sense of, you know, the comic book history. They're perfect. And then
the regular person won't care. Yeah, exactly.
But they'll either not make it into the movie at all, or they'll fit into the movie in a way that they're nonsensical to most other people. So you have all this crap in there, and now that's why you have him now. We're 2 years away from that movie, and he's still putting out like tweets about all this crap that he would have done. And it's like, how much of this shit do you have just like laying around of stuff that you would have done?
Well, I think you're right, you know, and the thing about the Marvel movies, you know, even though I criticize the Marvel movies for feeling assembly line sometimes, is that they really got a formula down that they can kind of hit, you know, they can kind of attract an audience that's not necessarily into the comics. So they really have like the pulse of like mainstream culture down, you know, and I think that Aquaman kind of does the same type of thing, and that's why it's doing really well. Justice League, though, I keep going back to I'm haunted by Ray Fisher on that set, though, because it was so like, we were all thought this guy was going to be the next big star, and he clearly was very optimistic. You know, I mean, he was seemed like a nice guy, but it just, I feel so bad for him now, though, in hindsight. You know, like, this is my big break. This is, and he was giving us his, like, I studied at Juilliard, and it was, and I felt so bad for him because
he
was so excited.
He's been the most excited person at Comic-Con for the last 2 years. Oh, I mean, he's just been, you know, just like this guy. He's up there on the stage with all these big stars. This guy's unknown. He's about to have his big breakthrough, like you said. He's so excited for the movie.
Yeah, and he seemed like a good guy, too. And he was good in the part.
Yeah. And now not only have I barely seen him since then, but they've pretty much, you know, canned that Cyborg solo movie they were going to do with him. Like, all this stuff is just gone. They've got a different
Flash
version of Cyborg.
I don't know what happened.
They've got a Cyborg running around in the Doom Patrol TV series that's about to come out. It's like his version's already been forgotten. You know, it's like it's sad. But anyway, Aquaman, I think we both like it. I would highly recommend it.
Oh, me too. You can't really go wrong if you just want like a popcorn movie to enjoy. Like I really had a good time watching it. And
it's underwater
and superhero movies. Superhero movies don't always work for me, you know, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, the Atlantis scenes look really good too, and I really thought they did a good job of building, doing a lot of world building. Atlantis feels
funny
a lot like.
Funny you say that though. I preferred it when it was on land, actually.
I like both sides. I like both sides. Yeah. Both has. I mean, I thought there were a lot of corny parts on land too, like when they went to Greece or whatever that was. That part was really corny, but
I thought it was really funny. They were in the middle of the desert that they jumped out of the plane to get, and then the next scene they're in like a jeep going to Sicily, and it's like, how did they get there?
but it felt like Atlantis felt a lot like Wakanda, you know, just underwater. So it's like highly advanced technology, but everything still comes down to tribal rule and like ritual combat, you know? So it's like,
speaking of Black Panther, it's really too bad that Black Panther's dead.
What?
Yeah. Black Panther, you know, he died at the end of Avengers Infinity War, which I guess we'll never see another Black Panther movie.
I'm sure he's done. You know, Spider-Man's not coming back either.
I mean, you know, I guess $1.5 billion worldwide wasn't enough to justify a sequel. Though for sure that they're, well, I mean, you know, they're going to just let it go at that. I'm sure.
Yeah,
no, they don't
done.
Need to make another one.
it'll be a different Peter Parker under the mask. It'll be a different.
Yeah,
it'll
I guess
be,
we're
it'll
done.
Be, it'll be,
oh well.
It'll be Shuri. it'll be Shuri under the mask. I actually do think she will be a Black Panther in the next movie. But that's another conversation for another day. All right, let's.
I think she'll be a Black Panther. Like, I think there'll be more than one.
I think she'll be a Black Panther, just like she was in the comics. She's a Black Panther, but you know, I think that while he's missing, that she will be filling in. So that's what I think. All right, let's move on. We got to keep going here. I'm gonna play a brief clip from Bumblebee, which is pretty short. So I want to play that for everybody, so everybody can get a taste of the movie.
What are you? Where did you come from? Okay, it's okay. Oh, me. Charlie Watson. I'm 18. Today. Actually, it's my birthday today. What's your name? You don't know, or you don't have a name. You sound like a little bumblebee. I'm gonna call you that from now on. Bumblebee. That's your outfit too.
You know, you listen to that clip, Chris. I feel like they changed Bumblebee's sound. Like, he doesn't I don't think he sounded like that during the movie, actually. I think he sounded a little bit more like a bumblebee than he did right there, where he sounded like...
Yeah.
He sounded like...
weird going on in that clip, though. I didn't recognize Haley Steinfeld's voice either, though. It sounded like they tried to make it... I think they tried to make it sound more childlike and innocent than the movie actually is.
I think they might have. You might be right about that.
Like, it's marketing. Like, a weird marketing ploy, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, Bumblebee, as everybody knows, is a... a prequel to the Michael Bay's Transformers movies that centers on Bumblebee, the little yellow sidekick of Optimus Prime's. And I feel like this movie, at least for me, was like almost everything I've been wanting the Transformers movies to be. when they first started talking about making a live action Transformers movie, this is kind of what I was hoping for. Yeah, it's a lot like the Iron Giant. You and I talked a lot about that, and I actually think that's a pretty good fit for this kind of film.
Yeah, I think so too. I didn't mean that. You know, when I tweeted that, you know, I saw your response. I didn't mean that as like a dig against the movie. You know, like I mean, I was fine with that. You know, Iron Giant is basically E.T. anyway. You know, so everybody owes something to somebody, but it doesn't mean that you can't necessarily make a good movie. You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, Avatar is, you know, Dances with Wolves and stuff, you know, I mean, you know, they always do that, you know, and even, you know, Black Panther, I mean, it's happened, the challenger to the throne, you know, I mean, these are classic stories, you know, but it's, you know, that doesn't mean you can't do something interesting with them. And I think Bumblebee did.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's a pretty good hybrid, because I think for people who aren't necessarily big Transformers fans, it has, you know, it has that sort of Amblin style entertainment that a lot of people that we don't really get to see enough of anymore. I know we get shows like Stranger Things that sort of play at that sort of stuff all the time, but not in a big blockbuster like this. We don't get it that much anymore. And I really like that reason. And I love that it actually brings the G1 Transformers that I've been asking for forever. That opening sequence, man, I was in tears. I was so happy, you know, where they're on Cybertron and they're having a big battle, you know, and you're seeing all these characters that you love. And I was like, oh my God, can we just stay here? And I was worried that once we got off Cybertron that I wasn't going to like the movie as much, but I actually did. And I actually thought the relationship between Haley Steinfeld's character Charlie and Bumblebee, and even her neighbor played by George Lindeborg Jr., who's an actor I really like,
he was his pal in Love Simon.
Yeah, he was in Love Simon. He was in The Land. He's a really good actor. And I thought John Cena's role was fun too, as the token human guy who's trying to destroy everything.
I really like John Cena in it. And the thing that I wrote in my review about John Cena, I thought it was so smart casting him, because if you look at the year that the movie set in, it's set in 1987, and if you look at the action stars, like the ideal action star in that era was Stallone and Schwarzenegger. And he looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's got the same haircut and stuff. And I thought that was smart, you know, because they were making him, you know, that typical 80s man of action. But then they kind of subvert that a little bit. And I thought that was actually pretty clever. Like, I thought he was very well cast. I like Haley Steinfeld a lot, too. You know, great. Kind of like Edge of 17.
I'm such a big fan of hers. I love her. She's come such a long way since True Grit, you know, first kind of introduced herself to her.
She was always good, though. It's weird. She was one of those people that was always good from the time she started. Like, she was never – I don't think I ever saw her give a bad performance. Like, she was always good.
She's pretty bad in that movie where she plays the assassin.
Oh, Barely Lethal? Well, that's Kyle Newman. Terrible. That guy's annoying. His Twitter campaign this week where all the critics gave Last Jedi a good review because they were afraid. Stupid. I hate that guy. Fanboys is one of the worst movies ever made.
It is an atrocious movie that even fanboys can't like.
but it's funny. Bumblebee, you know, what you said about it, for me, it's, you know, I hate the Transformers movies, right? And I really didn't want to go see Bumblebee. I wanted to go see Aquaman the night, but Paul forced me to go see Bumblebee. And, I really liked it, though. I really did like it, you know, and it was the first Transformers movie that I've ever liked, you know, and if that had been what the first Transformers was, I would be all on board for the sequel. And it's what it should have been, because they found a way into that universe that was kind of like, you know, you could have never seen a Transformers movie before and gotten a lot out of Bumblebee. You really don't have to have seen the other ones to get it, you know.
A Transformers movie without it being about this big giant war between the Autobots and Decepticons, which is the stuff that people can't really relate to. And it's just
loud, you know, and Bay's got a way of directing stuff too, that he has that stupid, you know, he's this real frat boy sense of humor, you know, and he's got everything is just so overdone, you know. And Bumblebee, I think, you know, you get like, you know, there are a couple of good things about Bumblebee. First of all, I think, you know, the screenplay is by a woman, and I think that that's interesting because you get a very different take on the characters. And I think Travis Knight also is a very, you know, is a much lower key director than Michael Bay. And I think that really works, you know, and You got much more likable human characters. Haley Steinfeld is much more likable than Shia LaBeouf ever was. You know, Mark Wahlberg in the last couple.
The action scenes make sense, too. I can never make heads or tails out of Michael Bay's fights between the Transformers. They look like garbage. I mean, they always look like, they look like trash cans, like, clanging together, you know? But I actually could tell what was going on in this movie.
It's funny because Bumblebee apparently cost about a third of what the last Transformers cost. But I would say that any of the action scenes in Bumblebee are better than any of the action scenes in Last Night or any of the other Transformers movies. Even the stuff on Cybertron, like I thought was, you know, it was like watching the cartoon come to life from the 80s. And that was really cool. Yeah. You know, like you said, it was really cool. And even though the fight scenes when they got back to Earth, I thought were good. Like I liked the climax. I liked Bumblebee. You get invested in the character too. And, you know, I got a kick out of seeing the Optimus Prime's, you know, the truck at the end of the week. I had that toy when I was growing up, you know, and it was kind of fun. You know, I'd love to see another one. I really hope it does well at the box office though, because it's kind of off to a slow start, but maybe it'll pick up a little holidays. Because I'd like to see more. If I see another Transformers movie, I'm really not interested unless it's more along the lines of, you know, a Bumblebee, you know, like that kind of talent pool involved. Because I really do not want to see another Michael Bay Transformers. I've had it.
If the next Transformers movie, because we know Bay is done, but if the next movie, just Transformers movie, is directed by, like, his protege, the guy who did the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. That guy's name.
Oh, God.
If it's directed by him, then we'll know. We know which route it's going. All right. I'm going to speed through these. I know you only got about 10 minutes left or so, so I don't want to spend too much time. So let me get your take on Mary Poppins Returns, which is a movie that a lot of people were very fearful of for obvious reasons. You're talking about a sequel to a classic film with Emily Blunt in the role. Emily Blunt's fantastic, you know, in almost just about everything. I would say that I really love her in this because I don't think she's trying to be Julie Andrews. She's doing her own version of Mary Poppins, and I'm a big fan of Lin-Manuel Miranda as well. So the musical acts and stuff like that really worked for me, even if the story I've seen like three times in the past year, because they did it twice in Winnie the Pooh movies.
that was the thing for me. You know, it's funny. I feel like I'm too cynical for Mary Poppins Returns. You know, I'll be controversial here. And I'll say that the first Mary Poppins movie is not the classic that everybody remembers it being. I think it's an okay movie.
It's not my favorite Disney movie.
It's not even, you know, even the best Julie Andrews movie she did that year. You know, I mean, it says Sound of Music is a lot better. But the thing is, the part was iconic, right? And I think that Emily Blunt really, really, really does a better job than anyone else could have as Mary Poppins. Like, I think she was great. And I really liked Lin-Manuel Miranda as well, who I wasn't at all sure about in the part because I feel like he's very contemporary. But I liked him a lot. And my issue, though, is I just feel like there wasn't enough of them in the movie, though. Like, I wanted more musical acts and more of the two. I found, like, Mary Poppins was oddly underused. You know, and I didn't need to see all the stuff with the grown-up Banks kids. Like, I found that not interesting. You know, and I didn't care that he was losing the house. He seemed like a bit of an idiot. I was very cynical.
You know what? Ben Whishaw's characters tend to look that way. Ben Whishaw's characters, because he kind of looks goofy. So, I mean, his characters kind of come off.
He's great as Paddington, though. He's fantastic as Paddington. But I got the hiccups. That's great for a podcast. I was just, you know, I didn't hate it, but I thought it was very bland. Emily Blunt.
I think I was a bigger fan of it than you were.
Well, I loved Emily Blunt and I loved Lin-Manuel Miranda. The two of them were fantastic. Wish it was more of them.
Vice, starring what I think was the best performance of the year, Christian Bale as Dick Cheney. I was a little bit concerned about this movie because I was worried that it was going to be W by Oliver Stone, which is a movie that I don't really like, even though I should have liked it, considering what it was, and I didn't like it. But this movie's a little bit better than that. While it is funny, you know, it's not overtly funny, and it gets really, really grim towards the end. It gets really dark. Because you realize, you know, what McKay is doing, it's the same thing he did with The Big Short, which is he's He's informing you about something really terrible. He's using humor as your entryway into it. But yeah. then he kind of starts spoon feeding you just a little bit of what the real consequences are, and putting a lot of the blame on you for letting it happen. I like that he's doing that, and I think he does a good job in this movie as well in doing that. My only issue with it is that there wasn't anything in there that I didn't already know about Dick Cheney. So it kind of felt like they were going a long way and not really saying a whole lot about the man. So, yeah. But otherwise, I did enjoy it. And Christian Bale, like I said, best male performance of the year to me. He's just transformative in that role. I was like, I can't believe this is Christian Bale while I was watching it. So
I liked it too. I liked it quite a bit. I'm kind of surprised that it's getting mixed reviews, but I really liked it. I preferred The Big Short. Like you said, I found there wasn't anything really new that they said in it that I also didn't really know about beforehand, but I thought that it was a really entertaining movie and that it moved well. I probably didn't like it as much as I thought I was going to, though. That was the thing. It was another one of those movies that, like, I thought was going to be amazing, and I liked it. Like, I would still give it, like, probably, like, an 8 on 10 or something like that, but it wasn't, like, the slam dunk that I thought it was going to be. I think my expectations were too high because I loved The Big Short. In terms of performances, though, yeah, I think Bale was great. Favorite male performance of the year, though, I got to disagree with you there. Mine is still Ethan Hawke for First Reformed. I thought that was...
Nobody beats
that for me. That's, like... Incredible. That's next level.
Yeah. Absolutely agree.
When we voted in the Critics' Choice, I voted, like, my first choice in almost every category was First Reformed. Best film, First Reformed, best actor Ethan Hawke. I voted for Cedric the Entertainer as best supporting actor. I voted for the girl who was like his love interest, not his love interest, but the one that he's really mean to. I voted for her for supporting actress. You know, that movie was fantastic.
It's the one that I really wish got.
Yeah.
I really wish got more attention, but I'm glad it's starting to get a little bit now. I would almost agree with you, because I think I did put Ethan Hawke as my number one best actor. It was either him or Bale, and I don't remember which one I picked. But either way, they're kind of a toss up for me. We both recommend Vice, and I know you got to go, but I got to get your opinion on Welcome to Marwen, which I know is the movie that you love the most. I mean, you and I have kind of talked a little bit already offline and stuff, you know, about Robert Zemeckis, and I believe that he spent so much time making motion capture movies that he's just kind of stopped. He doesn't know how to make movies that have heart anymore, because those movies.
I think you're totally right.
And it's ironic because he's spending so much time making movies that are adaptations of documentaries, which are about people, and they need to have heart. And the one thing this movie doesn't have is heart. And it's like, Jesus Christ. It's like, do something else.
Well, it's funny because, you know, the one movie that I would say of his recently that was the exception to that was Flight. But also Flight had a really good script, and it was also had that performance, you know, by Washington, you know, and that made the movie. You know, I think that Zemeckis' direction in that movie almost was a hindrance at times because I would say
that the performance is great. And I would say the script, while it's better than some of Zemeckis' others, is still like kind of histrionic maybe a little bit over the top in some of its depictions especially of addiction. It's like, okay, whatever, man.
Yeah.
But go ahead. Keep going with what you're saying.
But the performance was great. But the thing is also Welcome to Marwen. That was my big problem with the movie, though. And I think that was what really affected it for me, was that I didn't like Steve Carell in the movie at all. And it was weird. I tweeted afterwards that I think the only person who could have possibly made that character work was that you needed somebody that you would kind of invest in. And the only two people that I could think of that would have been able to do that part were Tom Hanks and Robin Williams, and I find that people are really trying to turn Steve Carell into another Robin Williams. You know, they did the same thing in Beautiful Boy, and I love Steve Carell. I think Steve Carell's great. I loved him in Vice, you know, as Rumsfeld, but I don't think he's Robin Williams. You know, I don't think he has the range that Robin Williams did. you know, Williams did a lot of shitty movies too, but the thing about Robin Williams is that he was, you know, he had this warmth about him. You know, he had this extreme kind of vulnerability, you know, and I feel that Carell doesn't have that, because Carell, I feel like when he goes to act, it's just the job, and then he could kind of turn it on and turn it off, and is probably not very tortured by his characters. Whereas Robin Williams put his like heart and soul into the performances, and I think that's what made him transcendent at times. And I think he could have probably nailed Welcome to Marwen, because he would have made that character more than two-dimensional. You know, and Steve Carell, I mean, everything about that performance felt fake to me, especially even just the way he smoked a cigarette. You know, you never see him inhale to cigarette smoke in the movie. It's just hanging out of the tip of his mouth. I thought it was just so phony. And I thought that the stuff with him and the women, especially with Leslie Mann, when he asked her to marry him, I thought that was such bullshit.
It was
too creepy. And it was just, and it didn't feel real. It didn't feel like something that guy would actually do. He was damaged, but he wasn't that damaged. You know, I think that was all right. I thought that it was oddly misogynistic for a movie that was supposed to be about female empowerment. You know, I mean, like, it's always him rescuing these doll women. Every woman he meets, he turns into a doll, you know, so he can rescue them.
Okay, that was
great
the creepy
fantasies.
Part. Because,
like,
because
it's weird.
Most of the time, the women were rescuing him. But what was creepy about it.
Not always.
What was creepy about it was the way the documentary goes through this, too. But it's, you know, it's coming from a place of honesty in the documentary. They're kind of trying to skirt it in the movie. Is that
he's fetishized? Does he have the love interest, like the girl next door that he's in love with, and then also the comic shop, the hobby shop owner that loved
him?
Like,
so.
I just felt, yeah,
I
like that
so.
Was just all Hollywood shit, you know. And it was, I also found it really weird that they tried to make it PG-13, like they're trying to fool a family audience into going to see it when it's really not that kind of movie at all.
He's fetishizing them. I mean, that's what he's doing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Zemeckis. You know, Zemeckis does this weird thing where he always casts his wife as, like, you know, the porn actress in it is his wife, right?
His
and it's always
porn star. Yep.
And he always does this, you know, and he's got, like, I think that Zemeckis probably has, like, a pretty antiquated view of women, you know, I think he's not necessarily a bad guy, but I think he's very, you know, he fetishizes women like crazy in all of his movies, you know, even in Allied, you know, and it was...
To be fair, the documentary, they go through that, you know, and he does fetishize these women, and that is a big part of it. But what and that'll be fine if that was what they were going to do in the movie. But what the movie does is try to sugarcoat that he's fetishizing. You know, that's when, you know, they make a little comment here about the heels. Oh, a little bit of comment. Hey, say, why is my top always down? You know, but they're not.
Yeah.
They're trying to have fun with it, but it's not. In reality, it's actually not a funny thing.
I think that's
creepy.
Absolutely right. It's they're trying to have fun with something that's really not fun at all.
Yeah.
You know, and it's something that's not, anyway, I don't know. I really had a problem with that movie. I had a hard time watching it. But for me, though, it all comes down to Carell's performance, though. If Carell had been able to nail it, I think the movie probably would have at least been watchable. But it was so bad at the point that I got up to go to the bathroom at one point, and my girlfriend whispered into my ears, like, honestly, like, she's like, you better fucking come back. Because she thought I was going to leave, because I was very vocal about how much I hated it, the whole movie. I was like, this movie sucks. This movie is so bad. And it was, oh my God, Universal. I don't know what they're doing. Who's greenlighting movies over there? Like, I feel like they have, like, a team of chimpanzees just randomly picking scripts, like that and Mortal Engines back to back. It's like,
oh God,
what is going on over there? What is going on over there?
Losing so much money on that movie. They lose so much money on that movie.
$200,
but, you know, it's like,
no problem.
I know. It's crazy. It's already
Christmas
out of the
relief.
Top 10. So it's
okay,
only been
Christmas relief.
Out of the top 10.
Oh my God.
But, you know, but I watched Welcome to Marvel with a friend too, and they for some reason they had it at like the biggest multiplex theater that with like the biggest screen here, and I was like, I don't know why they're doing that, but okay, whatever. And you know, and I'm watching it, and you know, my friend is kind of into it, and I just kind of sat there, kind of stone faced through it, like I don't know.
Yeah,
what
I had a hard time with it
right now, because I actually thought like the scenes in Marwen looked kind of cool. I kind of liked the way they put their real faces on these dolls and kind of made them look like little people rather than, you know, like
technology is impeccable, like
refugees from small soldiers or something like that. That's what I was fearful of. It actually looks pretty good. So I was like, okay, so I'm kind of liking that. But But the violence was wildly over the top too, and I was okay, why is this so disturbing? Like, I've watched a whole bunch of really like bad like violent movies over the last month. It's like, and this is disturbing me a lot more than those are. And yeah, I was like, but I was also I was also like, who's going to like if they're because the movie's being pitched as you know as this you know as almost like a family movie, but it's not.
Yeah,
not,
they're all saying from the director of Forrest Gump, Back to the Future, Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, there's people getting decapitated in this. There's people getting almost. There's like a couple of occasions where people almost get raped. You know, the women.
Yeah.
and it's like, I don't know what. I guess they assume because these are dolls that makes it okay. But no, the violence is still fairly lifelike. It was just confusing me. And I was like,
well,
I don't
they look like real people, and they're real like guys and stuff like that. Yeah,
they look like the actors. They look like
it's
the actors.
So weird. Just strange movie.
Right. Oh my god! All right, that's Welcome to Marwen. Don't go see it. All right, I guess that's why we didn't get Screen Rabbit either, because it's not a very good movie.
Oh, yeah, I know. Oh god. Yeah, no. I think Universal knew like why. Well, even that they only opened it on like 1,500 screens, and it made like $2 million or something like it's a disaster.
Yeah,
but I'm not surprised at all.
It's a tough sell at a tough time of year. I mean, and they moved.
Oh, I don't know why they're putting it out at Christmas, though. That's so stupid. They should have just, God, we burned it off in January.
Somebody had some sort of aspirations of it being an Oscar movie. It initially did, you know, when they first pitched it. You know, when you first cast it, it should be, but it's just not.
They took something, like they took an interesting premise and even a good take on the technology and stuff. But they really bungled it. Like they just, they really, really bungled it. And it was just an absolute disaster. Like every decision made in that movie from the first frame is just wrong, you know? And that's why it doesn't work. It never works. It never even comes close to working. And I think people are doing good jobs in it. You know, I think that the women, most of them were pretty good in the movie, but it's just,
I have a soft spot for virtually every woman in the movie.
Yeah.
I love Merritt Weaver. I don't think anybody plays a compassionate soul better than she does. I think she's fantastic.
That was another thing that really bothered me too, though. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I can't get Leslie Mance. I'm going to settle for her. And it's like, really, you know, like she's very appealing though. It's like, I feel like she could do a lot better.
She's been
than
helping
him
his entire life. She's like the only one there who's like there and knows everything about Marwen and is there helping his butt. And he's only just noticing her. It's like, okay. But
I feel like she could do a lot better than him too. Like that's the thing. Like I feel like she would probably like wouldn't have necessarily have a hard time like, you know, finding someone. Like it's just kind of, you know, I feel like she kind of she's stuck with him at the end. Like, feel bad for her.
He seems like a lot of work. Like I don't know why
she's gonna need her own like diorama to deal with that bunch of crazy guy that she's with.
He seems super high maintenance. Like, I don't know how you would do it.
I mean,
guy.
The rest of her life is just going to be about taking care of his shit. And every time they have a fight, he's like, well, I made a doll about our fight, you know? And
I know.
Like,
I know. And then, you know what? And it's going to be like in the beginning where she was like trying to ask him questions about this new girl. And then he goes and makes a doll about her. So he's like, oh, okay. So every time he meets somebody, if he makes a doll about her, she's got to feel threatened.
And then he gets mad. He just throws her in the pot, the dead doll bucket.
Yeah, I know. Why did this person get shot? Oh, because I don't like that person anymore.
Yeah,
because
they didn't want to date me. Stupid. Just a creep. Total creep.
All right, my friend. Well, I'm not going to bother asking you about second act because you probably didn't see it, just like I didn't see it.
Nope.
Jennifer Lopez movie, which did better than Welcome to Marwen, though, by a cool $4 million. So there you go.
Good for her.
All right, my friend. I appreciate you coming on, man, and staying a little bit extra for me. I really appreciate
my pleasure.
Everybody, go check out.
I will see you soon. I'll see you in a month.
Oh yeah. It's about that time. We still haven't got our tickets, but you know that's fine.
I don't know what's going on with that. I'm glad that I'm not the only one.
No, you're not the only one. I was going to go to the Critics' Choice Awards in a few weeks, but I think I'm going to pass on it. So, you know, it is what it is. But I would definitely
They called me and asked me if I was going the other day because they were trying to do their, like, we need you to help us say it on Twitter. And I was like, well, I'd love to come, but can't afford it. You want to pay?
Yeah. That's what it boils down to me too. It's like I thought I could afford it, and then I got this huge
like
tax bill.
Oh,
I got
sure,
this huge
yeah.
tax bill that came in all of a sudden. It was like, yeah, that's like your no Critics' Choice tax bill. So it's like,
oh yeah. Hey, pay for my tickets and I'll go. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, seriously.
If they want to pay me to go there and have me like you know do some spots for them or something,
yeah, I'll be on the next flight out.
I would totally yeah. do it. I would do it. I would do it in a heartbeat. But otherwise, no. All right, my friend. Everybody, go check out Chris's work over at Jillibo.com. You know he's one of the few critics I actually like reading their stuff. So go check out his work and check out his podcast with Paul, the Beard and the Bald, which is always funny.
Blog Talk Radio and also
yep,
on our YouTube channel. Joe Blow YouTube channel.
Yep, and you can also find it on the critical Facebook page, the critical over on Blog Talk Radio, and they got cool Miami Vice action figures now too. For Christmas.
we had to take off the theme song though, our Miami Vice theme song, because it was a Creative Commons violation. If we wanted to go on YouTube, to get on YouTube,
we have to do our own music. Yeah. Yep.
Apologies.
I'm my friend
John Johnson and Jan Hammer.
All right, my friend. I will talk to you later, man. Have a good rest of the weekend.
You too.
All right, that's my boy Chris Bumbray from JillaBill.com. Everybody go and check out his work there. He does great work. All right, that just about brings us to the end of the show. I knew it was going to be tight. I didn't have time to take a break. So there you go. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I know it's been sporadic over the last few weeks. Still working on the revamp of the show. It's going to take place when I return to Hashtag Studios. That is still developing, still going well, but, you know, it takes a lot of time. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in to this episode of Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics. You can find me every day there, all day. You can also find me on Channel 8 here in Baltimore, here in D.C. You can find me on WBAL Morning News in Baltimore and also on WBA Around Town. All right, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I will see you soon. Bye.